Sadhanar jivane yasya drishto bhavogdaya kramaha Raghunatham aham bande dasa goswaminam prabhum. I offer my homage unto my master Srila Raghunath Das Goswami by carefully studying his life and his daily practices of the regulative principles of devotional service. One can quickly come to understand the exact scientific sequential process by which one attains to prayojana, the topmost states of love of Godhead. Vanchaka patarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're in chapter 17. We're in text 24. The chapter is entitled The Descent of the River Ganges. The translations and the purports are as by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Okay. So text 24. This is the last text in the chapter. Ya nirmitam karyapi karma pravanim. Come on, you can do better than that, guys. Let's try again. Kavin nirmitam karyapi karma parvanim. Mayam jano yam guna sarga mohita Naveda nistarana yogam anjasa Tasmai namaste vilayo dayatmane. Yan nirmitam karyapi karma parvanim. Mayam jano yam guna sarga mohitaha. Naveda nishtarana yogam anjasha. Tasmai namaste vilayo dayatmane. Ya nirmitam karyapi karma parvanim. Maya jano yam guna sarga mohita. Naveda nishtarana yogam anjasha. Tasmai namaste vilayo dayatmane. Chant, please. Can you hear me out there?
Thank you.
Namaste Vila Yodayatmane. Yanirmitam karyapi karma pavanim. Mayam janoyam gunasarga mohita. Na veda nishtarana yogam anjasa. Tasmai namaste vila yodayatmane. Ladies. Nanir minam karyapi karma parvani. Nidavani starana yogam anjasha. Tasvai namaste vila yodayatmane. Na nirmitam karyapi karma parvanim. Mayam janayam gunasarga mohita. Na veda nishtarana yogam anjasha. Tasmai namaste vila yodayatmane. Word for word. Yat. By whom? Nirmitam, created. Karhi api, at any time. Karma parvanim, which ties the knot of fruitive activities. Mayam, the illusory energy. Jana, a person. Ayam, this. Gunasarga mohitaha, bewildered by the three modes of material nature. Na, not. Veda, knows. Nishtarana yogam, the process of getting out of material entanglement. Andasha, soon. Tasmai, unto him, the supreme. Namaha, respectful obeisances. Te, unto you, Vilaya Udaya Atmane, in whom everything is annihilated and from whom everything is again manifested. Translation. The illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to this material world. Therefore, without being favored by Him, persons like us cannot understand how to get out of that illusory energy. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the cause of creation and annihilation. I say, you say, the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to this material world. Therefore, without being favored by Him, persons like us cannot understand how to get out of that illusory energy. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the cause of creation and annihilation. Purport. Krishna clearly states in the Bhagavad Gita, Daiviyesha gunamayi mama maya dharachaya mameva ye papajjante mayam etam taranti te. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. All conditioned souls working within the illusory energy of the Lord consider the body to be the self, and thus they continuously wander throughout the universe, taking birth in different species of life and creating more and more problems. Sometimes they become disgusted with the problems and they seek out a process by which they can get out of this entanglement. Unfortunately, such so-called research workers are unaware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his illusory energy, and thus all of them work only in darkness, never finding a way out. So-called scientists and advanced research scholars are ludicrously trying to find the cause of life. They take no notice of the fact that life is already being produced. What will be their credit if they find out the chemical composition of life? All their chemicals are nothing but different transformation of the five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether, confirmed. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is never created. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. There are five gross material elements and three minor material elements: mind, intelligence, and ego. And there are eternal living entities. The living entities desires a certain type of body, and by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that body is created from material nature, which is nothing but a kind of machine handled by the Supreme Lord. The Lord gives the living entity a particular type of mechanical body, and the living entity must work with it according to the laws of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities are described in this verse: karma, pravanim, mayam. The living entity is seated on a machine, the body, and according to the order of the Supreme Lord, he operates the machine. This is the secret of transmigration of the soul from one body to another. The living entity thus becomes entangled in fruitive activities in this material world, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita: mana shastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. The living entity is struggling very hard against the six senses, which include the mind. And all the activities of creation and annihilation, the living entity is entangled in fruitive activities, which are executed by the illusory energy Maya. He is exactly like a computer handled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The so-called scientists say that nature acts independently, but they cannot explain what nature is. And nature is nothing but a machine operated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one understands the operator, his problems in life are solved. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam janmanam ante genavanmam prapajante vasudevam savarm itisa mahatma sadurlaba. After many births and death, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me, the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. A sane man, therefore, surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets out of the clutches of the illusory energy Maya. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto of the 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges. Okay, I hope I can get to everything. There's a lot in this purport. But the first thing I wanted to do is, how many here were here for yesterday's class? Raise your hand. Okay, it's quite a few. So anyway, in that particular class, there's this one purport I really love. It's in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it describes the different upadevas that are within this material creation. And actually, many of these Upadevas, they live within the same island of Bhumandala, Jambudvip, in which we live upon. So sometimes we read in the Vedic literature there is commerce between these different types of living beings, like between these higher living beings and us. There has been commerce. In the Kali Yuga, that commerce has stopped. The living beings are not interested in coming to the Earth planet during the age of Kali Yuga. But in other yugas, they came. And so therefore, there was commerce between us and these Upadevas that were being described in yesterday's class. So there's a very interesting purport. I think it's a lot of fun to read. It tells us a little bit about these Upadevas. It's very short. Please give your attention. I know everybody hates to be read to, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam class, but the purport goes like this. The translation goes like this. From the forefathers headed by Bhriga Muni and the other sons of Brahma appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, gayakyas, siddhas, gandharvas, vidyadharas, charana, kindevas, kinnara, nagas, and kimpurushas. Now I particularly want to point out these three last demigods that are mentioned in this verse. Kindevas, kinnaras, and kimpurushas. You notice that the prefix is kin. So this prefix, we will learn, means something. This prefix kin means, is that? It's a question. Is that? Is that a madanga? Is that a chalkboard? So this word kinnaras, kinpurushas, kindevas means, is that? So this just short prefix, okay? You got that? So kin means, is that? Okay. So all of the many universal species, along with their respective leaders, appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great many Vedic rituals, mantras, and rewards. So now we're going to hear about particularly these three species of Upadevas, the Kindevas, the Kinnaras, and the Kimpurushas. And it's very interesting, and I'll tell you why. You can just listen very carefully. If one is curious why the Vedic literatures recommend so many different methods of worship and advancement, the answer is given here. Bhrigu Matri, Atri, Angira, Pulascha, Pulaha, and Katru are the seven great Brahmana sages and forefathers of this universe. The Kindevas are a race of human beings who are like the demigods. They have bodies that are completely free from fatigue, from sweat, and body odor. Seeing them, when one sees them, one asks this question, Kindeva? Is that a demigod? Kindeva, is that a demigod? Actually, they are not demigods. They are human beings living in another planet within the universe. Okay? The Kinnaras are so called, and this is the interesting thing that I want to listen to this carefully because it's very interesting and I'll tell you why in a second. The Kinnaras are so called because they are Kanchan Nara, or a little like a human being. Okay? So when you see them, you say, Kanchan Nara. Is that a human being? Okay? So you say Kanchan Nara. And here's why they are a little bit like a human being. Now listen to this carefully. This is why the Kinnaras are just a little bit like a human being. Because the Kanaras have either a human head or a human body, but not both. Now, this is very important. I want you to listen to this carefully, because it's very, very important. Okay? They have a human head or a human body, but not both, combined with a non-human form. So either they have a head of a human being and a body of some other non-human, or they have the opposite. Okay? So strange creatures, huh? The universe is populated with strange creatures. Okay? Now, and we are the strangest, okay? We are also quite strange. Now, the Kimpurushas are so called because they resemble human beings. And thus, when you see them, they prompt this question. Kimpurusha? Is that a human being? Kimpurusha? Is that a human being? Looks like a human being. No, it's not. Is that a human being? Okay? So the Kimpurushas prompt the question, are these human beings? Actually, they are a race of monkeys who are almost like human beings. Hanuman is a Kimpurusha. Almost like human beings. Okay? So it's very interesting. So the reason why I wanted to just point this out is that often in different cultures across the world, you'll see different depictions of different beings, and the conclusion of the archaeologists, the conclusion of the scientists who are studying these cultures, they immediately assume, oh, some kind of primitive imagination of the ancient race. That's the immediate assumption. Look in your archaeological text. Some kind of primitive imagination of the ancient race. For example, if you look at Egyptian iconography that they've carved into the walls of their temples, you'll often see Ra, who is the sun god. In Egyptian culture, the sun god was called Ra. And then, accompanying the sun god, you always see this very interesting creature who has a body of a man and the head of an eagle. Okay? He has the body of the man and the head of an eagle. What do you think when you... I think his name is Orisis or Osiris. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that one. What? What's his name? Coles. Okay. So, we immediately think, Egyptian religion, crazy, insane, blah, 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 blah. And often, as you look at the archaeological evidence in many of the Eastern cultures, in Iran and in Babylon and in ancient Iraq and stuff like that, you'll see this motif repeating itself again and again. You'll see a human head on an animal body, or an animal head on a human body. So, of course, this is a speculation, but it is a speculation that's based on the Shastra. Maybe they had some kind of mutual dealings with the Kimpurushas. And it's not just some kind of insanity or some kind of imagination. So this is the one thing I wanted to bring up, that because we were talking about these races yesterday. So now we're going to turn today's, and I thought that purport was very interesting, especially the Kanara part, because you see these motifs again and again in archaeology among the ancient peoples, and we automatically assume some kind of insanity. But it may not be. Maybe they're on to something that is beyond us. Just imagine that. The scientific idea is that right now the human race is at the apex of its development. That's the idea, right? The human race has never ever been as advanced, never ever has been as savvy, has never been, it's reached the apex of its development. But no, the Vedas tell us differently. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. Just like writing, okay? We always say that writing is, oh, human beings were in darkness before the invention of writing, and we see that writing, the first writing was in Sanskrit, oh, about 2,300 years ago, maybe Aryan, anyway, they try to figure out what was the first culture that developed writing. And so we think, oh, writing, this was a great advancement in human civilization. But we understand from the Vedas that in former yugas, people didn't have to write things down. They could hear the mantras from their gurus. They could hear it once and they could remember it. So writing is an invention that was spurned, according to the Vedic point of view. The writing is an invention that was spurned or was generated not from a advancement in human society. The activity of writing was prompted by a degradation in human society. So this is things to think about. Now in this particular purport, we're hearing the descent of the Ganges River. We're going to see that the Ganges River is now going through Ilavritavarsha, where Lord Shiva resides. And Lord Shiva, we are going to see as the Ganges River travels through the different varshas in Jambudweep, that in every single varsha there is a form of the Lord that is worshipped. There is prayers that are glorifying that form of the Lord. And there are people who are reciting those prayers that's glorifying the different forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Point is that from the top to the bottom in the material universe, the worship of Lord Vishnu is there. From the top to the bottom. And all these varshas later on will be going out once we've traveled in Jambudweep for a while, we'll be going out across the ocean of salt water to the next island, then across the ocean of yogurt, then across the ocean of liquor. We'll be going out farther and across the ocean of sugarcane juice, and we'll see in every single island as Bhumandola expands outward that there's a form of the Lord and that there's chanting of the Supreme Lord's name. So it's not something that's just going on this planet among us. The point is that it's a universal thing going on throughout the entire world. Even in Pataloka, there are snakes in Pataloka. They're called Nagas, dragons, great dragons. According to the Vedic literatures, there are dragons. They live in Nagaloka. And they're down there, they have jewels on their head, and it's from the effulgence of that jewel that the entire subterranean world is illuminated. There's no sun down there. The whole subterranean world is illuminated by the jewels on the heads of the Nagas that live on Pataloka. But even they, way down there at the very bottom of the universe, they worship Lord Shankarshan, who resides on a planet down at the bottom of the universe. So from the top to the bottom, this worship of Lord Vishnu is going on. So therefore, here in this particular verse, boy, I don't even know where to start with this, but we'll start here. I won't have enough time. I only got 10 minutes left. So here in this particular verse, it's described how we conditioned souls in this material world, we are all bound up in illusion. There's a beautiful verse in the fifth canto, in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that I really love. And it's very rare, every once in a while when you're reading the Bhagavatam and you come across the verse that really hits you, it's a suggestion by the super soul inside yourself that maybe you should perhaps learn that verse. So every time I used to read the Bhagavatam, I would come across this verse and I go, oh yeah, I remember that verse. That's a great verse. And then I would forget about it. And then I would read the Bhagavatam again and I'd come across the same verse and I go, yeah, I remember that verse. That's a great verse. Someday I'm going to learn this verse. So I finally learned the verse. And it's a very, very simple verse, but it's extremely profound and extremely deep. It goes, Adrishtam drishtavan nangshet Bhutam swapnavan anyata. Swapnavad means like a dream. Bhutam bhavad bhavishyatcha Shuptam sarva. Shuptam sarva. Shuptam means not only a dream, but an incredibly thick, deep dream that we cannot awaken from. Suptam sarva raho rahaha. So this verse says something, it's a very simple translation, but it's very profound, and I wish you to please open your ears and try to hear it. This verse says, everything that exists in time, confirmed. Everything that exists in time. So we look around this room. What here exists in time? This table exists in time. The building itself exists in time. We exist in time. Our bodies exist in time. Matter of fact, if we carefully look around this room, we'll see that everything that's here exists in time. So this verse says that everything that exists in time, which is composed of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. This is the secret teachings of all the Vedic Shastra. So in the Bhagavatam, the material creation, this divine energy of the Lord that we are caught up in, this illusory energy, is compared to many, many things, none of them good. It's compared to a great forest fire. It's compared to a great ocean that is uncrossable. It's compared to an upside down banyan trees, and we are compared to little ants on that tree that get confused, wander around and go here and go there and get lost here and get lost there. So it's compared to many, many things, none of them good, but one thing that it's often compared to is like a deep dream. Just like we dream at night. And when we dream at night, we have a dream. We dream we're being chased by a tiger. And we're in a lower state of consciousness. It's quite confusing, but our mind is giving us all these images, and our subtle body is playing with us in this way, playing with us, the soul, in this way and that way. And then we have a dream we're being chased by a tiger. And then the alarm clock goes off, ring, 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 and we wake up from that dream. It was a terrible dream. We were chased by a tiger. So if someone comes to you and says to you, I had a dream, I was being chased by a tiger, it was awful, it was awful. And you go, oh wow, that's sounds like a really bad dream, boo-boo. And then if you see him the next day and he comes to you and said, I had a dream, I was being chased by a tiger, it was so terrible, it was terrible. And you go, oh wow, man, that must have been a really heavy dream. And he comes to you the third day and says, I had a dream. I was being chased by a tiger. It was awful. It was awful. What do you say to him? Get over it. It was just a dream. Huh? So similarly, in the same way, as soon as you wake up to a higher state of consciousness, then the lower consciousness, the things that are happening in that consciousness are completely discarded. You were dreaming you were chased by a tiger. As soon as you wake up, hey, I have to get on with my business in life. The heck with the dream. You discard it. Mostly we discard 99.9% of our dreams the moment we wake up. On occasion, we may remember one. So in the same way, the Vedic literature tells us that this world that we're in and our concerns that we're in, and particularly the body that we're in, is something like a dream. And when we wake up to the highest state of consciousness, when we wake up to the spiritual reality, then we'll be able to envision or realize or perceive this world as a dreamlike experience. And how do we wake up to this higher reality? That waking up specifically, and just like you wake out of a dream, the alarm clock goes off and you wake out of a dream and then you're in waking consciousness and the dream is... So you wake up out of a regular dream when you're sleeping by sound vibration. Ring, 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 ring. Huh? So in the same way, to wake up out of the dream of this material world that we're caught in, we have to hear the sound vibration. And the sound vibration has to be just like the sound vibration of the clock is happening in a completely different reality than the dream that you're dreaming. The sound vibration is happening in a total... totally immersed in this dream. I'm being chased by a tiger. Run, 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 run. Oh my God. And then the sound vibration, ring, 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 ring. It happens in a completely different reality. And then that sound vibration comes and it drags you out of your dream. In the same way, in a similar way, of course, analogies fall apart somewhere. But it's a good analogy. In the same way, by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, that sound vibration will wake you out of the very deep dream that we're dreaming like now. I am a man, I am an American, I am a woman, all my woman problems, I am a man, all my man problems, I am a human being. Just this time. Next time you may not be a human being. So this is the dream that we have to wake up from. Now let me see here. Okay. So therefore, sometimes this dreamlike situation that we're in is told to us in very plain language in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we don't like it. Because it's told to us in a way that comes after our emotions. Okay? For example, I'm reading the 11th canto right now, by the way, really great canto. If you really wanna, it's next to the 5th, it's really fantastic. But anyway, there's this verse I came across and I haven't memorized it yet, but someday I might memorize it. It's on it's in the chapter called The Description of the Vanashram System, and it tells us a little bit about what this dream like that we're caught up in God's divine illusory energy is like. So it says here, the association of children, wife, relatives, and friends is just like the brief meeting of travelers. With each change of body, one is separated from all such associations. Just as one loses the objects one possesses in a dream when the dream is over. These dear things to us, children, wife, relatives, and friends, we're just meeting here temporarily. And then when we die, of course, the whole phantasmagorical illusion is ended. And we have to move on to a completely different body and to a completely different place in a completely different time, maybe in a completely different universe. And so this is divyatia. This is the troublesome aspect of the material creation. This constant transmigration of the soul from one body to the next, to the next, to the next. So I'm out of time. It's 10 minutes of 9. I could have gone quite deeper, but I'm going to leave it there because I don't like people who go over their time in class. And so I won't do the same. But we're trying to wake up from the dream. The way we wake up from the dream is sound vibration. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'll leave you with a couple of verses. Etad nirvidyamananam ichchitamakutubhayam yoginam nripa nirnitam harir namanu kirtanam okim. The chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the doubtless. The chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free of all material desires, those who desire all kinds of material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of their transcendental knowledge. Etavan eva lokeshmin pumsams dharma paras mitaha bhakti yoga bhagavati tanama tanama grahana divihi. Devotional service, which begins with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is the ultimate religious practice for all the living entities within human society. Tasmat sankirtanam Vishnu Jagad Mangalam Amahasam. Oh, I want everybody to listen to this verse. Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnu Jagad Mangalam Amahasam. Mahata Apikora Va Vidi Aikanti Kam Niskritam. O King, O Maharaj Parikshit, descendant of the Kaurava dynasty, the chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu can eradicate the sinful reactions of even the most evilest of sin. Therefore, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Sankirtan party is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. So we have 6 people right now going out on Harinam. Okay, 6 of us doing regularly every day the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. I am humbly requesting everybody in this room, you don't have to come out on Harinam every single day. You don't have to come out on Harinam 2.5 hours every day. We do it for 2.5 hours. It's very simple. The Harinam goes out every single day. It starts from the corner of the long building where the coconut dab stand is located. And it walks around the compound. And it goes to different holy places outside the compound. Just come for an hour. 45 minutes. That's all. Come for a half hour. And don't even come for a half hour every day. But just come for a half hour every once in a while and join us. It's an easy gig. It's very easy. You just walk and you go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. It's a pleasant work. It's pleasant work. It's not terrible. It's not a terrible thing. So come and join us and just walk with the Harinam party. And if you do, you will be performing. You can be certain of it because it's verified by Sukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You will be performing the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. So easy. And it leaves every single day. And that's the glory of Mayapur, that these things are so readily available to us. Like the gorgeous deity worship here. I don't do a thing in the deity department, but I get to enjoy this incredibly gorgeous deity worship every day, looking at them so nicely decorated and dressed and so clean and taken care of so nicely. This is the glory of Mayapur. If you live in Mayapur and you don't take part in these activities, what's the point? So please come. And not just because I'm hitting you over the head with a guilt trip. But please come. Come to the Harinam. You will not be the loser. Okay? You'll be the gainer 100 times. Just walk with the Harinam. If you don't sing, you don't worry about it. You can walk in the sense. If you like to sing, we'll let you sing. We'll give you a microphone, if you can carry a tune. We'll give you a microphone so you can sing. If you want to play kartals, come up. I just want to let everybody know, the Harinam leaves at 4 o'clock right now during the summer season. It goes out the front gate. If you missed us leaving, you just go to the front gate. You ask the people there at the very front of the front gate, hey, which way did the Harinam party go? If we went to the left, we're either at Hulaghat or we're at the Jagannath Temple in Godrum. And if we've gone to the right, you'll find us either in Yoga Pit, in Srivas Angam, or in Marari Gupta. And also, if the compound is crowded, we stay inside the compound, so you can just find us inside the compound. And if it's threatening rain, we also stay in the compound because we don't want to get our equipment wet, so we want to be near our storage facility. So different things. But anyway, just come and join us and you won't be the loser. Okay, I'll stop there. Is there any question? Anyone wants to say anything, make a comment? Yes?
I wonder about, you said that the travelers,
they meet and then each one goes to their own different way and then they meet other travelers, but isn't it different with Vaishnavas, that they meet and then together they travel all the way back to Godhead, like they help each other, one is Maya, the other one help, and then the other one is Maya and the other one help. So I wonder, because
is it different with the Vaishnavas?
Every morning we are also singing Ramachandra Sambhavage, like Narottam Das, who want always the association of Ramachandra.
Is it different with the Vaishnavas? I'm sorry. As far as I understand, anybody can correct me with this. Prabhupada once said, he was once approached by Govinda Dasi, who is Govinda Maripusham Dhamamad, she sings that song every morning. And she told Prabhupada, I had a dream. And I had a dream that there was a huge planet, and you were on that planet, and everybody was surrounding you, and they were all chanting Hare Krishna, and we were all together in the spiritual world. So Prabhupada said to Govinda Dasi, oh, that's a real nice dream. So do we all meet up, do all the Vaishnavas meet up in the spiritual world? The answer to that question is yes, eventually. Now what happens? My spiritual master has told us we all got a ticket back home to Godhead. Now we'll see who arrives at the final destination, okay? Or how long it takes him to arrive to the final destination. People are getting on and off the train going back to Godhead all the time. If you just have to hang around the Hare Krishna movement and you understand that, people are getting on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. All. Matter of fact, we get on and off moment by moment and daily we get on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. So people are getting off. Somebody may get hung up in the various varshas. It's not necessarily Now, if every one of us becomes pure devotees, Hari Bol, I'll see you there. At the end, no problem. Hari Bol, I'll see you there. I'll see you in Goloka Vrindavan. Or in Navadvip Dham. Maybe both. Some of us may be both. But anyway, I'm hoping for Goloka. So, we'll see you there. But if we're not pure devotees, and when we see each other there, it's not exactly like, oh, this was my loving boy when I was eight. Oh, I remember him. Oh, this was my wife. It's my wife. Oh, baby, come to me. You know. So it's not exactly like that. By the time you get there, you're a perfected being. And so I'm just saying that I'm a married man. I have wife and children, and even before I died, boom, 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 boom. You know, everybody's got karma that's throwing them all over the place. I'm in the Vanaprastha ashram now, but you know, my wife went this way, my daughter's going this way, I'm going that way. I'll tell you a story. You want to hear a nice story? It's an interesting story. It's a Prabhupada story, and I like this story because it says something about Prabhupada and his family. One time, at the very end of his life, Prabhupada was in this building right here, Lotus Building, and the devotees approached him. This is in Satsarup Maharaj's Life with the Perfect Master. So the devotees approached him. They said, Prabhupada, we want to interview you about your life before you came to America. We know everything about your life after you became to America. You know, basically they were saying, Prabhupada, we know you're getting on in years, you're getting old, and we need to have this information before you pass on. So please, can we sit down and can we interview you about your family, about your past life before you came to America? So Prabhupada agreed. And so for several nights, they were asking him questions. You know, when did you meet your spiritual master? Where were you born? Blah, 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 blah. Most of that stuff we now know. It's common knowledge. It's in the Prabhupada Lilamrita and other books. But this didn't make it into the Lilamrita, but it made it into Satsarupa Maharaj's book, Life with the Perfect, His Grace, His Divine, His Holiness, Satsarupa Maharaj's book, Life with the Perfect Master. So they began to ask questions to Prabhupada about his family life. Blah, 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 da, la, da, 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 la, da, da, da. How many children do you have? By the way, did you know that Prabhupada had three children that died in childbirth or were miscarriages? Something I just learned the other day. He had four children. I think he had three that didn't make it. Anyway, that piece of information came to me from Hari Sori. He told me that. So they began to ask Prabhupada questions about his life, and da 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 da. And then finally they got to the quintessential question. They said, Prabhupada, was your wife a devotee? This is what they asked Prabhupada, was your wife a devotee? And Prabhupada all of a sudden went. And he closed his eyes. And he was quiet for a long time. Previous to that, he was answering the questions as they came. He was quiet. He got very thoughtful. Finally, he opened his eyes. He said, my wife, she's a devotee. But don't ever think she's a devotee like me. So people go in different directions, you know, and you ain't going to be able to handle it and keep it together no matter how much you wish. You can't do it. It's not under your control. Your wife, if your husband is going to leave you, your children are going to leave you. Either you'll leave them sometimes before death comes, it happens. Sometimes after death, at death you have to leave them. So therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Vedic literatures, there's something that's told again and again. And we're not anti-family, because it sounds like I'm speaking anti-family stuff, but we're not anti-family. What we are is we're anti-attachment. Okay, I'll say that one more time. We're not anti-family. We're anti-attachment. And the way you stay detached is by the constant absorption in the name, fame, form, qualities and pastimes and attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have to go through life remembering, hey, this is a dream. And you have to have some understanding of like that, of that. And if in the course of your life you become completely immersed in the dream and you begin to think this is the fundamental reality, my wife, my children, my house, my land, my property, my wealth, my
someone else belongs to him. So therefore, use it in service and get the reward. Okay? Is that his question?
Sorry. One thing. Why does Narottam Das Thakur say he always wants association of Ramachandra?
With who?
Ramachandra, no?
Yeah, Ramachandra Kahe. Narottama Das, because he's a pure devotee. He's not his wife. He's not his child. I always want association with devotees. I want to live in the association of devotees forever and ever and ever. It just may so happen that the person who is your wife, or the person who is your child, may not, or the person who is your uncle or your aunt. Nirmana maham jitta sangha dosha. Jitta sangha dosha. Jitta means to conquer. Sangha means association. Dosha means faulty association. Are you going to hang out with your relatives if they don't want to be devotees? Just because they're your relatives. Sometimes people are put up against the wall. They have to make that decision. What do I want to be? Do I want to be a devotee? Do I want to hang out with the devotees? Or do I want to hang out with the relatives? Because the relatives might wheel you in and drag you down. And if you see that's what's going on, then you have to go, Chitta Sangha Dosha, I have to conquer this association. Even though you love them, and your heart is full with emotion, even if you love them, you might have to say, ah, can't do it. Okay? Because they're dragging you down. They're dragging you down. Achyahara prayastischa prajalpo niyamagraha jana shanga chaloyam jana shanga. You have to give up the association of the non-devotees. Now he mentions it twice. Utsahan nishchaya dairya tatta karma pravartana sangha tyaga. Sangha tyaga means you have to give up the association of the regular worldly minded people. And if somebody who's extremely close to you is going to, wants to be, and is determined to be, a regular worldly-minded person, not interested in the processes of Krishna consciousness, then you have to step back and be detached, extremely detached. It's difficult, but you have to. There's nothing else you can do. Okay? I hope that's okay. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.